Today's episode of the Axon Creative Podcast is brought to you by Skillshare. Join the millions of students learning on Skillshare with 2 months absolutely free. All you have to do is go to skillshare.com/AC to get started. Hey everyone, welcome to the Accidental Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I am your host. I'm also the author of The Accidental Creative, Die Empty, Louder Than Words, and the new book, Herding Tigers, which is about how to lead creative teams effectively. So when we think about design, we often think about packaging, or we think about user experience, or we think about product design, industrial design, things of that nature. We think about the things that we make and that we use every day and how we interact with those things. And those are all very important aspects of design, for sure. Design is used in all of those applications. However, what about things like saving the world? And that sounds pretty big, sounds like a huge topic, but today's guest believes that we can apply design thinking to doing just that, to saving the world. Her name is Katie Patrick, and she is a designer. She's also an environmental engineer, and she's going to talk with us today about how we can apply principles of design to create spaces that are more sustainable and also that help us solve some of the biggest environmental and social issues that we're facing today. Before we dive into the interview, just a couple of things. If you are a leader of teams, if you have people you're responsible for, I encourage you to jump on the leader list. It's a very simple once a week email, just a quick tip, idea, principle, something to help you be a better leader that week. Very practical, very to the point, no fluff. So if you're interested, just go to toddhenry.com/leader to jump on the leader list. Again, that's toddhenry.com/leader and join your fellow thousands of listeners who are on the leader list getting a tip each week. Also, today's episode is brought to you by Skillshare. So Skillshare is an online learning community with thousands of classes for creators, entrepreneurs, and curious people everywhere. We talk all the time on the show about the importance of following your curiosity, of asking questions, of developing skills, of continuing to push up the curve, developing your skill set so that you can apply those skills to new and more challenging problems. But where do you learn those skills? Well, Skillshare is your partner in doing that. You can take classes in illustration, graphic design, photography, creative writing, but not just creative skills. I mean, you can take courses in productivity, marketing, web development, finance, you know, running a business. How do you launch a business as a solopreneur? How do you manage the back end of that business? How do you promote and market that business? Skillshare has classes from experts in all of these topics and so many more that will help you develop exactly the skills you need to take yourself, to take your business to the next level. So whether you're picking up a new skill for your day job, maybe you're trying to figure out what your next side project is going to be, maybe you just want to develop a passion project, maybe you want to start a new hobby, Skillshare has classes for you. So join the millions of students already learning on Skillshare today with a special offer just for listeners of the Axon Creative Podcast. You can get 2 months of Skillshare absolutely free. That's right. Skillshare is offering the Axon Creative listeners 2 months of unlimited access to thousands of classes for free. To sign up, all you have to do is go to skillshare.com/AC. Again, that's skillshare.com/AC to start your 2 months now. That's skillshare.com/AC. We thank Skillshare for sponsoring this episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast. Well, it's so great to have Katie Patrick with us on the show today. Katie, welcome to the Accidental Creative Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
So could you, this is a really difficult task, I think, but could you explain to us what you do? Because there are all kinds of things I know that encompass the world of what Katie Patrick does. But can you describe to us kind of who you are and what you do?
Well, I always call myself an environmental engineer and designer because I actually have an environmental engineering degree and mostly what I do is design. But the way I narrow that down is by using the metaphor of a Fitbit for the planet. So if you have a Fitbit, you can on your wrist, you can see how many steps you're walking or your biometrics, and you can see it immediately in this feedback loop. And then by seeing the numbers, you're able to change the way you're exercising. I take that concept and I think about that for the whole Earth, like the oceans, electricity, air pollution, the amount of trash you're using, your carbon footprint. And I think how can we create a bit for all of the Earth's dynamics. And that comes out in all different sorts of technology and software design.
So you've been dedicated a significant amount of the last part of your life to helping us understand, maybe even in some ways quantify and also understand how our everyday actions and what we do affects the planet. And you mentioned Fitbit for the planet. I think this is a brilliant idea because I think for many of us, it seems like, you know, who doesn't, if you ask somebody, would you like to save the world? I mean, who's going to say no? No, of course. No, I don't. Of course not. I want to see my children's planet, you know, destroyed, or, you know, nobody does that. And I think a big reason why we don't act according to what we want is because we don't understand the implications of our actions. And maybe it feels too big and like unmeasurable to us. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, exactly right. Well, it's not just that it's big and unmeasurable, it's that it's invisible to us. If I ask you, how many pounds of trash did you make last week? Or how many kilograms of carbon dioxide does the office building you work in produce the last year? Like, zero people will be able to answer that question, right? Nobody, right? It's just, people just don't know, you know, but you usually know maybe how much you weigh or how much is in your bank account. You probably know what the population of the United States is. So we have this lack of transparency. It's completely invisible, all of these numbers. And I had, you know, what you were saying before, just a hunch. I felt the same thing. I was like, if people don't know the numbers, it's really hard to get motivated and to get agency to do something. And that's really where all my this work came from, that I got so fascinated by that. So I started hunting for academic studies, case studies that I could kind of prove this hunch. And as I started to find them, they were really profound. Like, one study showed that if you just show people how much paper they're recycling at a university, another one for how many cans, just showing the number when you put the trash in, it went up by 60 or 70%. You know, and that's almost unheard of in when people are usually trying to affect change that much. That's a massive change by just showing people the numbers.
Yeah. So how, I want to take a couple steps back and just, you know, ask how did this become a core passion for you?
Oh, a core passion. I've just been fascinated by the question, how to save the world. That's what my book is called. That's what my podcast is called, How to Save the World. Mm-hmm. I have just been deeply obsessed by how to save the world my whole life. Even as a child, when I saw on the news, I grew up in Australia, and whaling was a big issue in the late 80s and early 90s. There were every night on the news, there was a picture of a whale with a harpoon covered in blood being pulled up onto a whaling vessel. And I just thought that was enormously heartbreaking. And there was a lot of, you know, Greenpeace activism around then. Every time I would see something about, you know, dolphins being stuck in fishing nets, I just thought that was like, or a tree being cut down. I just thought, oh, that's just horrible. We have to stop it. We have to do something about it. So it was so kind of core to who I always have been. But then the next step is really the question of causality. You know, okay, you want to save a tree, you want to save a whale. How do you actually do it? The whole movement does a lot of things that aren't effective, and it's really hard to figure out how to actually create change. So that becomes an entire intellectual discipline in itself of how do you actually, if you actually like want to take carbon out of the air or plant trees, or you want to get not just yourself but 1,000 people, how do you get 1,000 people to plant 1,000 trees? That's an entire discipline, and that's really what's fascinated me my whole life.
Well, I think that's the big question, right? Because again, I think if you ask the average person on the street, yeah, they want to save the planet. I think most people at this point are convinced that the science says that the Earth is warming. Most people recognize that pollution is an issue. Most people recognize that we consume far more than we should. And yet, at the same time, most people don't do anything about that. And so what's interesting to me is that it seems like what you're doing is you're using design thinking to help us consider, like, how can we quantify this for people? And also, how can we maybe even gamify this in a way? Is that a word that you might use to talk about what you do?
Yeah, I am really happy with the word gamify. Game designers tend to not like it because I think they find it is reductive to their craft.
Sure.
But when it comes to the environment, I mean, we haven't brought in any of the game design principles into what we do as environmental engineers or environmental scientists. So there's this massive creative opportunity to bring that in. I just did a design mock-up for the, do you know the Magic Leap glasses where you get to see these augmented reality. So I just realized that's a whole other creative canvas to work with. So I did a design mock-up. It's on my Twitter if anyone wants to have a look at it, of the that you could look at through the buildings in a city, kind of have like an urban corridor, and then you would be able to see the energy efficiency of all of the buildings, their kind of carbon footprint per square foot. And each building would have like a different color on it. And then it would have like smiley faces, and then there's like a bit of a hot face for the one that's doing really badly. And then, you know, like green, you know, like a green growing kind of like icon or badge for the ones that are doing well. So these game design principles of designing levels, you know, from like poor to better, providing like a rank, providing these sort of like fun visuals, like smiley faces or frowny faces or different emojis around that. It's a very simple game design concept. It's not that advanced in the craft of game design, but when we bring that into something like sustainability, you've got something like super fun, like imagining being able to wear the magic lip glasses and look around the city and see the different environmental impact of all the buildings around you. That's something that's super creative and fun that you can do when you start thinking in this type of design thinking way.
So when we think about creativity, I think sometimes we tend to decouple creativity from measurement, from data. You know, we tend to think of this sort of flighty, out there, ineffable, unbounded process. But you know, what you're doing, I mean, obviously it's remarkably creative problem solving that you're doing, but measurement and data are really kind of core to what you're doing. So how do measurement and data connect to the creative work that you're doing?
Oh, I am so passionate about bringing measurement and data to the center of the creative process. It's one of my life passions. That when you actually start looking into numbers, yeah, there's a sense that like people think, oh, how could just looking at numbers, that would make you less creative somehow? Like, no, it makes you more creative. If you look at, for example, all of perhaps the energy consumption of the United States, imagine all of those different watts of power moving everywhere and where they come from and the different carbon impact. You know, some of them come from gas, some come from coal, some come from rivers, some come from wind turbines. You have all that moving around. And you study those numbers, and then they all get used by different people, billboards, houses, office buildings. And then you think, what could I do as a creative force to help affect those numbers, to help less coal, less carbon, you know, more energy efficiency? And then you think about it as a creative, wrapping your creative force around a deep understanding of these numbers, you'll come up with amazing ideas, and you'll think in a totally different way than boxing yourself into, how do I think of an app? How do I think of a new film? How do I think of a YouTube video? How do I think of a book? Which are kind of like creative templates that we're used to thinking of. When you just look at raw numbers, like, you can have a completely different creative canvas to work from than the way that we're kind of taught to think about creativity.
So what are a couple of your favorite examples of ways that you and others are using design thinking to and applying it to environmental engineering and this, you know, desire to save the world?
Oh, well, can I just talk about my own stuff?
Of course.
All my favorite stuff is my own ideas. That sounds really selfish, doesn't it?
No, well, I think it sounds like you really love the work that you do. I think that's a great thing.
Yeah, okay. Well, something I'm really excited about now is doing a thermal mapping of the urban heat island. So what happens is that when cities get really hot in summer, they get hotter than the surrounding areas, and that causes a huge load on the electricity grid. Right. So I thought it would be really cool if we could take a photograph with a thermal camera, you know, the ones where kind of everything looks like a rainbow. You can, the hot bits are red and the cooler bits are blue and green. And then when we could show people that on the website, you could just look up your address and see what your thermal load is. And then I thought about, well, started learning about Magic Leap glasses, and I thought, well, we could actually create like a 3D thermal world using LIDAR radar, which tells how distance everything is away. So you kind of get like a bit of a 3D map of a city. So we could put the LIDAR together with the thermal camera, and then you could put on like Magic Leap glasses or any of these augmented reality glasses, or if your phone, if you don't have them. And then you would be able to see, like, walk through the city and see like a 3D model of where all the heat was coming from and how that affects the amount of energy everybody is using. So that's just like a really fun and creative way to interpret basically peak load on the electricity grid which sounds really boring when you think about it. Who cares about peak load on the electricity grid? But you can interpret it ways to affect change in these fun ways. Another design I've got on my website is, you know those, have you ever seen those cycling counters? They have them in some cities. They're kind of like a black totem pole with a little number, electronic number on it that yes. counts the amount of people that cycle.
Yes.
Well, I saw that and I thought, this is great. Fitbit for the planet. It's counting the cyclists in real time. Awesome. But the design is so boring. I was like, well, why don't we make it into a giant Pac-Man? And then every time you go past the Pac-Man, it lights up and it gives you positive feedback. This is something from game design. You know, make it novel. Give, if someone does a good job, you reward them. You basically say, good job. Here's something novel and fun. And then it lights up and then it flashes. You're awesome. Good job. Every time you go past. So it's like public art. It's like public art and like game design in the physical space. And so anyway, I plan to pitch that to them. I'm going to call up all of the totem pole bike counter people and say, you know, why don't you try making it into some like big fun flashing thing, which would be much more fun to ride past than just knowing that it counts you, which is kind of boring.
Sure, absolutely. Well, if there are people who right now they want to understand like how they can take a step, how they can use their own creativity, how they can apply their own innovative thought to some of these big problems, what are some ways that people can enlist in this Fitbit for the Planet movement?
Well, at the risk of like plugging my book, the book is really
well, that's why we're here, right?
So I always feel shy about it, though. I always feel embarrassed, like I shouldn't be doing it. The book is a fantastic nexus of if you're a creative person and you want to do something that has real impact, you can go through the 10 steps in it, and all the 10 steps are based on academic case studies of what works, and then figure out how to do something creative that's going to have a real impact. It starts off with just measuring something you want to change. Like, look at all the things in the world, you know, forests, oceans, animals, waste, trees, all this stuff. All this stuff is being measured by sensors or satellites somewhere. Now, maybe a little bit could be done better. And just start, once you start researching the numbers, it starts to take form. You'll find a download for something, look at some images, read some posts, and then it'll start to make sense. And then the next step you do is you figure out a goal. You go, okay, I figure out where things are at now quantitatively, and then you develop a quantitative mission statement for where you want to go. Maybe it's green cover in your city. My city's green cover is currently 8% of surface area. We want to get it to 40%. That's basically your progress bar, your spine of change. And then you come up with a dream, you know, this sort of optimism or imaginative dream of where you want to go. Well, what would our city look like with 40% green cover? We'd have to put green roofs on everything and plant trees on all the city streets. And then we'd have to put like vines and canopies on everywhere. And then you get into this really fun phase of imagining the future world. So out of the doom loop of we're all going to die, the planet's ending, and into the imagination space of like, what do I want the most amazing world to be? And then you can start creatively branching your ideas off that. You've really looked at the numbers in detail. You've got a vision of where you want to go. And then you're like, well, how do we make this kind of utopian, amazing world come true? And then you can really get into that. And if you're a creative person, you'll be really rich and have a lot to offer in that process. And then once you've got the numbers and you're sort of, you can find a way to show them to people in your community, you can start adding behavioral psychology techniques to that. Like, do you get people to, for example, pledge? Like, you can just ask people to write down, I commit to plant a tree in the next month. And that's proven through the many academic studies to work. If you just ask somebody to write down, I'll plant a tree, they will probably go and plant a tree rather than just sending a flyer out saying you should plant a tree. You know, one's asking for a promise, one's kind of telling something what they should do. And there are a number of these psychological techniques you can get people to sort of bring them into your projects and help them get traction. And you can put these things together. There's measurement with this behavioral psychology to get people to act. And you've got those two halves going together, you know, measurable change, the behavioral psychology of action. You'll be able to come up with something really, I think, really special that can really create change.
That's fantastic. Well, Katie Patrick is an environmental engineer. She's a designer. She's also the author of How to Save the World. Katie, if people want to get a hold of you and learn more about your work, what's the best place for them to go?
I would urge people to sign up for my website, katiepatrick.com. It's spelled K-A-T-I-E. And I have a whole bunch of free downloads, and I send, you know, lessons and little sort of templates that you can use on my email list. I've got a whole bunch of stuff there. And you can also get my book. There's a button there to get through and to get the book. And I also have my own podcast where we go through some of these concepts in more academically rigorous detail, if any of that wants to get into the deep nerd space of measurability and behavioral science. And I put a lot of designs. I do designs a lot, and I put them on my Twitter. It's just at Katie Patrick. You can scroll through the images there if you're looking for some fun visuals to get inspired by.
That's great. Well, Katie, thanks so much for taking the time to share with us, and thanks so much for the great work that you're doing.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks so much for having me, Todd.
And as always, thank you for listening. If you like this episode, make sure you subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, or jump on the email list at accidentalcreative.com/subscribe. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. We'll see you next time.